Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome again to another day of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you've joined us once again. In Greenville, it's currently 49 degrees outside and going to get up only to a high of 59 today. Although the weather forecast was wrong yesterday. It said it would be up to 66, and according to my car thermometer, we were up closer to 80 yesterday. It was a beautiful day, even though it started out a little bit cold. But at any rate, today, expecting a few showers here and there in the morning. In the afternoon, there could well be thunderstorm activity, so be prepared as you make your way out to work today. A lot of exciting things happened yesterday. It was a great day. I had an opportunity to attend two great events, both the Americans for Constitutional Government. This is a group led by Ann Campbell and a couple other fine ladies, and they had an opportunity to host a couple of very interesting speakers yesterday. One of them being Tony Taylor from the Sheriff's Department, the Gang Investigation Unit or Gang Intelligence Unit, and another being Mr. Ron Wilson, who is a member of the Sons of Confederate Veterans, of which of course we support wholeheartedly here on Christian Worldview. And the Sons of Confederate Veteran guy, as well as an entrepreneur, and also now has recently been elected to the State Board of Education for Public Schools. So that was very interesting to listen to him as well. In the evening, I had an opportunity to attend the Institute on the Constitution. The Institute on the Constitution occurs at South Point Baptist Church. That's 203 Ina Marie Lane in Pelzer, South Carolina. And it occurs every Monday night for the next 9 weeks now. It'll be continuing. There's a couple of videos you watch, and there's a lot very rousing discussion with the 50 people there. So great class, and really, really thought-provoking. Even if you go and don't agree with everything you hear, which it was my case. There was a couple things on the video I didn't agree with personally, but I'll tell you what, it's this kind of meeting that really gets people thinking right with the right way in the right direction about public policy, about what God says they ought to do with respect to the state, what God says the nature of the state is. We had all sorts of interesting questions arise there, including should we have a flag in the church building or the auditorium, you know, a U.S. flag, or should we pledge allegiance to the flag? And you know, what is the nature of the state? Is it actually up there to punish evildoers according to what God thinks is evil or and good, or reward those who think He thinks are good or not? So there was a lot of rousing discussion about very interesting points that are very important for Christians to understand. Also, a great discussion there about what the vision of the founding fathers was in terms of their own religious perspective, how the Bible should be integrated, or what the laws of the land should be based upon. And it's pretty clear. I did a good job last night of debunking the idea that so many founding fathers were deists. This is probably not the case that there were so many deists. There is some question that was left unanswered there that is interesting to talk about, and that was the Unitarian and unorthodox tendencies of some of the founding fathers. How someone could be, as John Adams purportedly was, according to Russell Kirk at any rate, a Unitarian Calvinist is very, very much beyond me. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But nevertheless, apparently some of these unorthodox views were being held by many people shortly after the Great Awakening. When I say shortly, I mean within the next 20 years or so. So anyway, these were great topics of discussion. Oh, also talked about slavery that night, whether or not it was how you could have the idea of equity and still have slavery. If you missed that meeting, you really need to make a point of going to the Institute on the Constitution every Monday night when you can. I know it's a little bit of a drive for many of you being in Greenville, having to go all the way down to Pelzer, but it's worth the drive. It starts supposedly starts around 6:30 and ends at 8. At least that's what the flyer says. We found last night that it started a little bit later than 6:30 and ended around 9 o'clock because there was so much commentary going on. So, at any rate, if you have a chance next week to make it to the South Point Baptist Church, we'd encourage you to do so. Call Pastor Tony Romo for information or to register at 864-269-1443. That's 864-269-1443. You'll be glad that you did. Any rate. The Americans for Constitutional Government meeting yesterday was as I say, a rousing, a tremendous hit. And in fact, the guy started speaking. This fellow Tony, the sheriff's police Tony Taylor, the sheriff from the sheriff's department who runs this gang investigation unit. Yes, even here in Greenville, apparently there's gang activity. He's talking about kids, no doubt, in the public school. I don't know any homeschoolers who are in gangs, which I'm glad to know about, and I'm glad to testify to today. So if you want to ensure that your children won't be in gangs to some extent, as much as you possibly can, I suppose, make sure they go to church and make sure that they go to homeschool and don't have to be involved with the temptations of being involved with gangs. He gave you all sorts of very helpful hints yesterday about how to notice your child might be in a gang, such as the different signs he makes with his hands, or the kinds of clothing he wears with the different symbols on them, or the tattoos they tend to put on them. Again, I don't know any homeschoolers with tattoos, but there could be some out there, just don't know them. He said if your child starts bringing home large sums of money, you know he doesn't have a job, then you might be suspicious. He's in a gang, the guy said, yes. Well, that's a good point. So next time your kid brings home large sums of money or merchandise or things that, you know, he shouldn't really have that Corvette, no reason to believe he could get one, then he might be involved in gang activities. And this is actually what the guy talked about. I'm not just exaggerating too much here. This is really was his speech. It just seems kind of funny for the people, the audience he was talking to. None of them, I'm sure, especially because they're children, or most of them are children are grown, but none of them probably had a difficulty with their children being involved with gangs. Yet they were very interested, all of us in the audience were interested, to hear what was actually happening by the rascals and the degenerates in public schools these days. I'm not so much willing to blame the youth as I am the parents and the government, or the state, for invoking this whole public school idea, which tends to foster this nonsense like gang activity. The most interesting thing that the guy said, the sheriff, was that he believed that, I asked him a question. I said, look, what is a gang? And he had said, let me back up here a minute. Getting ahead of myself, so excited about saying this comment, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. What the kind sheriff said was there are three characteristic things that make up a gang. First of all, it has to be a group of three or more individuals. Second of all, they all have to have a common identity, or maybe a common objective. And thirdly, they have to be engaged in criminal activity in one form or another. So I raised my hand and I said to the fellow, Mr. Tony Taylor, would you then agree that the founding fathers were part of a gang? Obviously, there are three or more of them. They had a common identity or a common purpose, and they were all engaged in what the king considered to be, and Parliament and many others of the day, criminal activity, treason, and other things of that nature, insurrection. And he stopped and said, yes, I guess the king would have considered them all to be gang members. And I said, well, then I guess you can count me in the gang. I guess I didn't realize it, but I am a gang member. That's right, the Tyranny Response Unit is a gang member. So, and perhaps some of you are also members of the same gang or a different gang. When I say criminal behavior, it doesn't have to be necessarily immoral behavior. You understand the point. Not saying that any of us engage in crimes against humanity that God would see that as immoral. We're talking about things that the state declares to be crimes, which are really not crimes at all. They are simply political protests or struggles for liberty or people trying to invoke and protect their rights in this world. For instance, the man who I understand on the listening to a radio show the other day was recently sentenced, I think it was in Massachusetts, to 20 years in prison for carrying a bullet, not a gun, just the bullet or the cartridge, you know, containing the bullet and the shell and the gunpowder and the primer. All that little unit he carried into the some building he wasn't supposed to. 20 years in prison. Folks, this is not immoral to carry a bullet somewhere. I'm sorry. This guy was shafted, slammed by an evil state, and even though he's considered a criminal and no doubt a gang member, of some sort, it doesn't mean he's doing anything wrong. So we are part of the righteous gang, those who uphold the truth in the world here at the Tyranny Response Network. Welcome to the gang membership, folks. Thought that would be of interest to you to ponder what people think and describe as a gang. Of course, it's very convenient for them to call us all gang members eventually, isn't it? Because if they can marginalize us into being gang members, it's easier to sell the soft-skulled public on why the government or the state should be able to attack us. And that's exactly what we can expect on the horizon. They don't like us, and they're going to continue to molest us in one way or another. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're glad that you've done so today, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. Government is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. President George Washington.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And yesterday, after the Sheriff Tony Taylor spoke to us at the Americans for Constitutional Government meeting. By the way, that meeting occurs every Monday, the fourth Monday of the month. And it starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's only 1 month out of the year, or maybe two, that they skip. I think there's a combined meeting in the summer where they go off somewhere. It might be July. And I think the Christmas program is at a different time. So they might not have the fourth Sunday or fourth Thursday in December may not occur. But in general, if you go to Sims Library on Pelham Road here in Greenville, you'll be able to attend the Americans for Constitutional Government meeting at 10 o'clock till noon. The second speaker was Ron Wilson, and Ron Wilson, as I said, is a noted conservative. His credentials are impeccable, from what I can tell, as far as being a conservative goes. In his comments yesterday, he made it very clear that he was opposed to the liberal establishment. He got right into the face of these public school folks that are running the board down in Columbia for the state, and basically said, "I'm not supporting sodomy. I'm not supporting evolution. I am not supporting your liberal agenda, and I don't like the idea that you're taking the Constitution and the ideals of the Founding Fathers out of the American school system and indoctrinating these kids and brainwashing them." And he's been, along with a couple others, I think you mentioned there might be four others out of 17, the conservative side of that particular board. Of course, they're being overrun in every vote by anyone else. But he's been hard at work, actively trying to work against evil in this way. Unfortunately, in my point of view, of course, you know it well, the public school is intrinsically evil. And I think the only error I heard him say that really stood out was that, look, 96% of the kids are going to go to public school because there are no alternatives for them, and we have an obligation to try to save this thing because it is the foundation of our country. In fact, they even said this on the tape of the Institute for the Constitution. Public education is a good thing, and we need public education, in order to ensure that the values of liberty are passed on from generation to generation. Folks, what you don't realize, if you believe that, is that it's exactly the opposite. The case is totally the opposite of what you're thinking. The public school has always been our main enemy, the thing that has torn down liberty, torn down our value system, promoted secular humanism. It's never been an aid to the church or to liberty or the American ideals or the ideals of the founders. In fact, just the opposite's the case. We find that the public school system had a bad inception, it's a bad heart, if you will, and it's been polluted all along and gotten worse and worse over time. We've seen it degenerate at an enormous or exponential rate just in the last 30 years. The idea that Mr. Wilson had that we could not, that many people would not have an alternative if there weren't a public school is simply not true. Not homeschooling is a choice. Anyone can homeschool. There have been, and especially now with all the curriculum that's available and the used books and so forth, even the smallest budget a year, and I was talking to Ben Graydon, he's very good at putting together these low budget programs for homeschooling. For $100 a year, you can buy the materials necessary to educate a kid. And you say, oh, well, you know, Dr. Coben, how can you do that? You know, we can't afford to quit our jobs. You know, we need to have our lifestyle the way that it is. Well, there's questions about whether or not you need to have the lifestyle you've got, so therefore you need two incomes in your home. But even if you do choose to have that sort of lifestyle support by working two full-time jobs, it's still possible to homeschool, believe it or not. I mean, the child stays somewhere during the day, and right now it's in the government indoctrination center. Instead, why not try putting them with grandma, for instance, or it could be, you know, another center as well that you might put them at, or a babysitting service or something, and then allow the child to have his study time during the day. Motivate that child to do his own schoolwork. What you do is you'd get up a little bit earlier in the morning. It might be 6 o'clock in the morning before you go to work. Be ready and sit down with that child and go over his studies with him for an hour every morning. Get him started on what he's supposed to do or she's supposed to do for that day. A normal homeschooled child can finish the grammar school if they're really bright in 3 hours. If they're a little bit average or slower child, might be four, a few more hours to do the workbooks that are required. Remember, homeschooling is a self-study, self-paced sort of a system. And so with this approach, you could get them started for an hour, answer any questions they have, and then set them on their way. In the evening, you could come back, and provided there would be enough discipline during the day for them to do their studies, and if not, there's something called the rod that helps you correct that problem, by the way, just a point of encouragement for you. When one of you comes home in the evening, you could then make the first assignment. Perhaps one will be making dinner. The other one can go and simply correct the homework. Or correct the schoolwork for the day. There is no homework for homeschoolers. And while correcting them, say you correct the English book first and find out there's 15 errors in there out of 60 questions. There might be that many if you're letting the kid do it on his own most of the day. He has to stand there right with you at that time, take the book, and you explain to him what he did incorrectly, and he needs to go and fix those problems. And then go to the next book while he's fixing that one. And then make sure the child, before he goes to bed that night, has corrected all of his books. The next day you start the same thing. So really, with each parent putting in an hour a day, I think it's very feasible to homeschool at least several children. It's very easy, frankly, to homeschool just one child. If you've only got one or two, there's really no excuse other than your own vain imaginations about how difficult it would be. Remember, God says you are the only qualified person to teach your children. Not only are teachers not more qualified than you, public school teachers, for instance, you are the only one that God has given the responsibility to educate the children, and you can do it. There are lots of helps out there and materials if you feel incompetent in one area or uncomfortable teaching in one area. There are also many wonderful cooperatives, especially in places like Greenville, that you can avail yourselves of very inexpensively for the high school years in particular, as well as other years. So anyway, the idea that Ron Wilson said that, well, there's just no alternatives for other people is simply not true. There are other alternatives. In fact, if there were no public school system, what would the alternative be? Let's think back a little bit, like 200 years ago, like the founding fathers had. Now, what happened when there was no public school system? Did people just go uneducated? Did they become illiterate? Did they just develop without knowing how to do simple mathematics? No. How did they learn stuff 200 years ago? How did the founding fathers learn stuff without there being a government school system, and for the most part, no parochial school system at all. Well, they learned at home, folks. I mean, it's not. It shouldn't be any great, leap of reason and understanding to realize these people all learned at home. Their parents taught them. Now, sometimes they had tutors come in, and there was some formal instruction, and the Sunday school classes at church were also a part of formal instruction. But in general, it was the parents who took the lead and educated these kids at home. So Mr. Wilson greatly erred when he said that the children have no alternative. The only alternative we really have is to eliminate the public school. It's a disaster, and it's our greatest enemy. And this is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We've come up against another quick break. You see, I've carried on so long here, and we've carried up another quick break. I hope you're enjoying the show this morning. We'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Will Rogers said, "Those who complain about the high cost of government should be glad we're not getting all the government we're paying for."
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking and will soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Well, I'm picking on one particular point that Ron Wilson made, and I want to emphasize that the vast majority of what he said was wonderful. It was an excellent, excellent, some excellent comments that he made, so I don't want to sound negative here and just picking on this one point. But it is a false presupposition, illusion, assumption that people make, that the public school is somehow a necessity in society, either to promote liberty, sustain liberty, or as the only means to educate children. It's simply false, folks. It's not the case at all. Ron Wilson did bring a couple of excellent books, it looks like. I bought a pair of them yesterday, America's Schools, The Battleground for Freedom by Alan Quist, and another book by Alan Quist called Fed Ed, The New Federal Curriculum and How It's Enforced. Now, Alan Quist, from what I read a little bit last night, is also under the same delusion that the public school is somehow necessary. But he's very opposed to what's being taught in there, the takeover of the curriculum, the rewriting of history, the rewriting of the curriculum, so that it includes all sorts of environmentalist babble, I should say, and socialism, Darwinism, multiculturalism, political correctness. These kinds of things are emphasized in public schools. Now, we knew this by reading Bruce Short's book, The Harsh Truth About Public Schools, where he, agreeing with me, thinks you just need to abandon the public school. In fact, it was kind of cute. I was having lunch with Ben Graydon and a number of others at California Dreaming last Friday, and someone had asked Ben, "Well, you know, Ben, I've got my kids. I think the guy had his kids in the public school," and so he said, "Well, Ben, what should I do right now, knowing that my kids are there?" He said, "Well, as soon as lunch is over, I would get in the car and go right over there right away, pick them up, and never bring them back." He said, "Well, even this close to the end of the semester," he says, "it doesn't matter. You get your kids out of there. Don't leave them in one more second than they have to be right now, because you put them there. You've basically, you said, you've sinned by putting them there, and you need to repent and pull your kids out of the public school center, the indoctrination center. Does that sound radical to you? It sounds radical to you because you have not been transformed with the renewing of your mind and understanding either two things. Not only, first of all, your role biblically as a parent, and second of all, the role that that we have as those who cherish liberty and want to enhance and protect the vision of the founding fathers and protect our rights and liberties here in America. You are your own undoing when you use the public school and bring your kids there. It's simply a disaster. Now, Ron Wilson is down there trying to do a bang-up job on this board in Columbia, and I appreciate his being there. Unfortunately, at least from my perspective, if you read Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, that's my latest book, in Chapter 6, you'll find that I have a scathing critique of the public school, and I consider it to be no different than any other unredeemable, non-transformable institution that has no place in the kingdom of God. In other words, it's like an abortion clinic or some kind of kiddie porn firm. There is no redeeming use for the thing. It cannot be sanctified in some way or put back into its proper course. The only course that is the proper so-called transformation is to raise the thing entirely, destroy it, eliminate it, be done with it. There can be no salvation of the public school. And I think Ron Wilson is down there struggling, basically beating against the air, wasting time, and to some extent, by saying we're going to go ahead and try to reform the public school. I think it's a diabolical institution that cannot be reformed. That's my personal view, obviously. There are others who don't agree. They think that somehow you can make the public school a nice place for Christians to be, or innocuous place that where liberty can be heralded once again. I think this is a pipe dream, personally, as I said, but other people have different perspectives. I leave them to the liberty of conscience, their own liberty of conscience, to do as they please. He's down there struggling with a good conscience, struggling to do the work, having a clean conscience before God, and believing that he is serving the Lord with all his heart. And for that, I commend Ron Wilson and his efforts down there, even if theoretically I believe he will ultimately fail. He believes he's doing God's service by supporting what the Constitution requires. That you have to laud a man for. How hard is it to find someone who stands for principle in our day and age? Well, I'll tell you what, you're not lacking any principle when you listen to a guy like Ron Wilson. It just comes on out of him. He just emanates with principle. The guy is doing what he believes is right. And generally, even though I might disagree with him on his points, theoretically on what he's doing for his choices in life or his paradigm for what he's planning, I have to commend the guy for his willingness to stand up for what he believes is right in the face of tyranny, in the face of so many leftists and liberals who not only want his undoing, but are working against the faith, against the vision of the founders, trying to tear down what America was and install tyranny. So, get a couple of these books from Ron Wilson if you can. Maybe you could contact the Americans for Constitutional Government if you don't know another way to get a hold of Ron Wilson. I don't have any of his personal contact information. Neither did he give me the liberty to give it out over the air, so I won't be doing that. But he's probably contactable through the Columbia unit of the Public Education Board, the state Public Education Board. Again, get these Alan Quist books called America Schools, The Battleground for Freedom, and Fed Ed, The New Federal Curriculum and How It's Enforced. I think they'll be interesting reads. I haven't finished them, but it looks like they will be. And if you're only going to read one book about the public school, I still have to bring you back to Bruce Short's book. That's Short spelled with two T's, The Harsh Truth About Public Schools. You want to see what the public school is all about today? Read that book. It's a big volume, but it's captivating, and it will show you exactly what kind of tyranny is going down in the public school system. Well, we're coming up to our top of the hour break. When we come back, I want to talk a bit more about what went on at the Institute for the Constitution last night, because that was also a very worthy thing that was happening there, a very worthy conversation and worthwhile bringing up. Right before we go to the break, I'll just mention to you real quickly that Confederate Memorial Day is coming up Saturday, April 30th at Clinton Square in Clinton, South Carolina at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. For information or details, call James DeShields after 6 p.m. Monday through Friday at 864-969-5029. That's Confederate Memorial Day in Clinton Square, April 30th, 2 p.m. Call 864-969-5029. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we'd like to welcome you back to Christian Worldview. Glad you've joined us this morning. Had a rousing discussion early on in the show, if you missed it. We talked about the different events that occurred yesterday, including the Institute on the Constitution a little bit. Specifically, though, talked about the Americans for Constitutional Government meeting with featuring Ron Wilson, who's now the conservative board member at the state public school department, or whatever it's called, the board down there, as well as the sheriff, Tony Taylor, who heads the investigation division, or gang investigation division here in Greenville. Well, we might go back and talk about a few things here and there, but we got other things we need to bring up as well. It's currently 48 degrees outside. Actually, a degree cooler than it was at the beginning of the show. And it's only going to get up to 59 degrees today. Going to have some showers in the morning and thunderstorms in the afternoon, so be prepared as you make your way out for work today. We have a couple of other announcements. First of all, this is from Nathaniel Strickland, wanted to let us know. He says, Dear Dr. Coben, the South Carolina League of the South announces that the Greenville County chapter has been successfully reactivated. The April meeting will be held 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, April 28th, in the meeting room of the Prime Sirloin on Woodruff Road across from the Greenville Mall. Come for food, fellowship, and information. The League of the South is the most active organization in South Carolina fighting against the forces of secularism, liberalism, and multiculturalism. Come hear reports of the flagging of the anti-heritage Inez Tenenbaum as we prepare to unelect her in 2006. Also learn how about the two bills of the South Carolina League of the South is currently supporting in the South Carolina State House, House Resolution 3213 to end abortion in South Carolina, and House Resolution 3652 to give parents tax credits to allow them to get out of the public school. Well, if that's PPIC, we're not going to be supporting that, personally, at any rate. I don't know what that is. The South Carolina League of the South is also currently pushing for anti-illegal immigration legislation. Hope to see you there, and if you feel is it appropriate, feel free to announce the meeting on your show. Dio Vendice, Nathaniel Strickland. Well, happy to do so here. Happy to let people know about this meeting. In fact, I hope to attend myself because our good TRN pastor, Tony Romo, will be the featured speaker, I believe, at this meeting, 6:30 p.m. Thursday, April 28th, at the Prime Sirloin on Woodruff Road. Hope you can all be there. Should be a good outing. We also have to remind you about our friends at the Times Examiner. The Times Examiner features the Tyranny Response Unit's column, that's me, as well as a number of others like Ben Graydon, Walter Williams, Thomas Sowell, many others that you would love and appreciate here locally as well as nationally. Call Bob Dill at 864-268-0576. That's 864-268-0576. And you can give you a subscription for $25 a year. And if you're out-of-state, Christian Exodus members coming to South Carolina, take note. Out-of-state subscriptions are only $27. Get the real inside scoop, the true investigative reporting on what's happening here in Greenville, as well as wonderful columns about, well, the things that will make you think about liberty, the vision of the founders, homeschooling, as well as a Christian view on public policy by reading this wonderful publication. Call Bob Dill at 864-268-0576. Indeed, he has been publishing a series of mine called Christian Views on Rebellion. This week's edition is going to feature part 6 of 7 of that series. If you want the entire series, there are two ways to get it. To go to policyofliberty.net is one way, and you can go there. Actually, it's both ways by going to policyofliberty.net. Sorry. If you scroll down to the section or go to the link that says articles and papers and then scroll down to the section which says Times Examiner articles, the last one will have a link to parts 1 through 7 of Christian Views on Rebellion. You can read that, print it, all those sorts of things, pass them out to people if you'd like. The other way is to click on the file next to it that says Listen or Audio. And it will pop up a presentation for 46 minutes of me reading these articles in an audio format produced in a production studio format. You can go ahead and copy those to a CD or what do they call it, an MP3 player, I believe, or you can simply play them off your home computer and listen to that series. A series is also played on the Tyranny Response Network currently, and if you happen to be listening on the radio, you should be, or the webcast, you should be able to hear it as well. I encourage you to do that to get that information. We appreciate Bob Dill's efforts at the Times Examiner for promoting this vital information and helping Christians to think better. Well, we have a couple other announcements that came up yesterday. There is also the StopTheFTAA.org, Activate Congress to Stop the FTAA. If you go to that website, stopthefTAA.org, you'll be able to enter your information and your vote against the FTAA. We need to continue to pressure Congress to not do the FTAA or to do the CAFTA, C-A-F-T-A. Why? Not because we're against free trade. Even though these things have the word free trade in here, it doesn't necessarily mean they are free trade. Remember, 200 years ago, I would have been proud to call myself a liberal, and so would you. Because to be a liberal in the classical sense was to be to uphold the principles of Thomas Jefferson or any of the other founders, for that matter, most of them, at any rate. And although, you know, we have to say the Burkean conservatives also were there, there was certainly nothing askew with calling oneself a liberal 200 years ago. Well, 100 years ago, you might also call yourself gay. How many of you are willing to call yourself gay today? Well, it has a different connotation. Well, here the word free trade is being hijacked by the liberals, the leftists of the day, and they've turned free trade to mean socialism, globalism, government control over our lives, greater intrusions into our transactions, exchanges, and liberties. That's what they mean by free trade. We don't here, but when they use these names like the Free Trade Agreement or Area of the Americas, well, don't buy it, folks. It's nothing to do with true free trade. It's everything to do with socialism, government control, the erosion of our rights, the displacement of the Constitution by other forces, the dark forces and the dark institutions of the left. We need to be very opposed to it in every way. So anyway, go check out that website. We want to make sure that you oppose those evil things, and so we bring them up to your attention here on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back.
For anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. Government is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. President George Washington.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported. And here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast. But we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's nppros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.nppros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we're trying to provide more and more roughage for your brain as much as we possibly can here at the Tyranny Response Network. Our research staff always likes to come up with special little things for me to note on the air, and today is no exception. The research staff came up with this email, and they sent it to me. Maybe we should give them all a cow. Is it just me, or does someone else, or does anyone else find it amazing that our government can track a cow born in Canada almost 3 years ago right to the stall where she sleeps in the state of Washington? Then they tracked her calves to their stalls, but they're unable to locate 11 million illegal aliens wandering around our country. Maybe we should give them all a cow. Well, folks, the point is government isn't really interested in tracking where illegal immigrants are in that sense. That's one issue. The other is cows do not have a human brain, obviously, and they are not able to evade things as illegal immigrants are. So although this is sort of funny and trite in a way, and cute, I guess you might say, the fact of the matter is that it's much easier for a human being to evade surveillance than a cow. Sort of silly to equate the two in a way. But anyway, the research thought that was a cute little quip they found on the net somewhere, and so thought I should bring it up today and read it. Also, illegal aliens are not wandering around. As far as I know, the illegal aliens I know and have met with, they are here just to work for a little while, and most of them, the vast majority that I spoke to, go back. They just come in here for a job, they go to work, and then they leave. Now, I realize there's a lot of controversy about the immigration issue, and even among those of us who have goodwill towards the right perspective, differ to some degree on this. If you'd like to talk about that, you're welcome to call, and we'd be glad to talk with you. 864-244-8177. Questions can be sent by email 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. Another little quip that we found from Gray Echoes of pro-Confederate mailing list from our research staff forwards me some interesting stuff from there. They said, they keep talking about drafting a constitution for Iraq. Why don't we just give them ours? It was written by a lot of really smart guys. It has worked for over 200 years, and we're not using it anymore. That's so funny. Did you get that, folks? We're not using our constitution anymore. Let's give it to them and Iraq. Yeah, good, good. Let's get them on the right track. That would work real well. Okay, another interesting quip. The Ten Commandments, the real reason that we can't have the Ten Commandments in a courthouse. You cannot post thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, and thou shalt not lie in a building full of lawyers, judges, and politicians. It creates a hostile work environment. So true. That's right. They don't need to be convicted by the law. Remember, the law is our schoolmaster to bring us to Christ, and the last thing that a politician wants to hear is about his own sin, which is ever before him. At any rate, George Bush is not exempted from that, by the way, any more than Bill Clinton or Ted Kennedy or any of the rest of these guys. We have another story that came up that I thought was interesting to read and note. Changing gears here a little bit. The Cult of Ayn, or Anne, some people pronounce her name, Ayn Rand. It's by Jack Kettler. It's a review of Without a Prayer, Ayn Rand and the Close of Her System by our friend John W. Robbins. It's published by the Trinity Foundation in 1997. In the quest to provide a basis for civil liberties and freedom in general, many have attempted to set forth a philosophical foundation. Building upon the right foundation is absolutely crucial. No matter how brilliantly elucidated a philosophy purporting to be in the basis for freedom may be, having a faulty foundation will cause the whole edifice to eventually collapse. Lisa Zinoviena, whatever that is, Rosenbaum, excuse me for mispronouncing your name, but Lisa, I just can't even hardly read it. It has two V's in it. Lisa Zinovievna, that sounds better, Rosenbaum, known later by her writer's name, Ayn Rand. Oh, this is the one. I didn't even know that Ayn Rand had another name. Shows you how ignorant I am about Randianism. Well, at any rate, learn something new every day. Sought to establish the philosophical basis for freedom using man's reason as the guide. This attempt on Rand's part would prove to be no small task, since at age 13 she decided she was an atheist. Robbins argues persuasively in this work that Rand's atheistic philosophy, known as objectivism, does not have satisfactory starting points or presuppositions which lead to freedom. Rand was a brilliant writer, novelist, and philosopher, but as Robbins points out, it is incredible to believe that Rand, at the age of 13, scrupulously considered the traditional arguments for God's existence in addition to also excogitated refutations of them. Robbins faults Rand for the use of logic, but for not being logical enough, and relentlessly holds Rand to the standard of logical consistency. Robbins demonstrates that conclusively that many of Rand's conclusions are wrong, such as her atheism and empiricism. That's empiricism, by the way, for you homeschoolers listening, is a idea, a philosophy that says if you can't see it, touch it, taste it, feel it, it doesn't really exist, or it should not be part of policy. You really have to be able to experiment and prove something in reality in order to hold it in theory, if that makes it a little clearer for you. Those who doubt Rand's commitment to empiricism and materialism are wrong, since Rand believed at birth a child's mind is a tabula rasa, page 29, classic empiricism, and a matter is indestructible. It changes its forms but cannot cease to exist, which is page 20, which is her materialism. Robbins also demonstrates that where Rand happened to be right in her conclusions without logical defense, even these ideas were set within the context of error and thus invalidated. Robbins takes Rand's objectivist epistemology apart. The objectivist will no doubt dispute this by saying that Rand was an atheist and not religious, that it really wasn't important for our theology, but Rand was intensely religious, says Robbins. For example, in the fictional character of John Galt, Rand fabricated her own Messiah, says Robbins on page 126. This is pagan idolatry worshiping an invention of her own mind. Robbins shows how Rand deliberately smuggled Christian ideas into her theology by investing in the creature with attributes of the Creator, he says on page 127. In conclusion, Rand's philosophy can never provide the basis for freedom, since it is built upon a philosophy, empiric materialism, which exalts man's reason as the final arbiter. This philosophy upon which scientific socialism is based has been used in history to murder countless millions of people in light of her presupposition shared by some of history's most notorious communist murderers. She hated Ronald Reagan's minimal expression of Christianity so much that she wished to die if he was elected president. And so I think, as she says here, as Robbins brings to our attention, Rand may have gotten her wish. She was inaugurated in 81 and she died in 1982. I couldn't agree more with what he says in the criticism of Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand is interesting to read. It's not a novel that I would give to teenagers, as it contains all sorts of events. Stories about the adulteries of different people. But if you read the rest of it, her book and her story, if we're like Atlas Shrugged is what I'm talking about, her famous novel, it is worthy to read because it shows just how the world could operate well without the state intervening in our lives. She's not against she was an anarchist, but in the book it's not necessarily against all government whatsoever. Her philosophy is there in her little John Galt speech, her objectivism. But be that as it may, you can be prepared for that as an adult. You can read this with some profit, and it is worthwhile to note with those who are do not hold a Christian worldview and yet love liberty will actually become. And I think Rand is a good example of someone who will not hold a Christian worldview and still agree with us on having free markets and a desire for liberty. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad that you did this morning, and we look forward to coming back to talk with you some more right after this break.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Will Rogers said, "Those who complain about the high cost of government should be glad we're not getting all the government we're paying for."
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking and will soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or a comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
The Nationalist Times is a politically incorrect monthly newspaper that has reported on the progress of the Christian Worldview program since it began. TRN listeners can obtain a free postpaid sample copy of it by calling Nelson at 864-642-4315. Visit the Times website, anu.org. Mention this ad for a big discount on your subscription. The Nationalist Times picks up where the liberal media leave off and salutes Dr. Coben's pioneer broadcasting work. And we appreciate those kudos. Not to say that you're going to agree if you get this newspaper with everything you read, especially those of you who are sensitive towards things like Zionism and whatnot that are brought up there probably in a much stronger way than I, the Tyranny Response Unit, would do so. But you know what, folks? Having a paper on yourself and reading it, and even if it includes a few things you don't agree with, should not dissuade you from maintaining that subscription or getting a subscription to papers that promote the truth, alternative news sources than the talking heads and the blather you hear in the mainstream media. Get this publication, get the First Freedom, read it with profit. Remember that even our favorite here, the Times Examiner, is still full of many neocons and others that do not understand the truth as far as we're concerned, yet we're still either A, able to not read their articles at all, just skip them, or B, read them with an open mind, understand, and be able to see why we've rejected their particular point of view. So by all means, get as many of these papers and things coming to you as possible so that you can help yourself become a thinking Christian, one who loves liberty and one who wants to promote the truth. Well, we have another, speaking of promoting the truth, we have a book review by David Horowitz that was sent up by the research staff. I want to read a few excerpts from that. A guy named Jack Kettler wrote this review of Politics of Bad Faith by David Horowitz. Sorry, the review was by Jack Kettler about David Horowitz. He says, "This work is nothing short of brilliant. While not lengthy, this work by Horowitz is one of the best, are most important of the decade because it substantiated thesis linking socialist ideology with religious presuppositions. Because socialism is a religiously held ideology, it is able to continue or perpetuate itself generation after generation despite its complete failure to achieve anything positive in history. In essence, socialism is a depravity that resides within the hearts of men, manifesting itself as theft and envy towards one's neighbor. Socialism uses power and the force of government to achieve this perverse goal of towards one's neighbor's good, usually called redistribution. Horowitz shows how socialism, once gaining political power, inevitably uses the state to steal from its citizens and to tyrannize them, and consequently can never hold the allegiance of the people once in power, except through brute military and police state power. Socialism is another name or face of Marxism or communism. Socialism has perfected this brute military and police state force into an evil art form. Those on the left in this country have given themselves to religion hell-bent on using the very freedom they enjoy, a product of the West, to destroy the very foundation of freedom in the West. In reality, Horowitz demonstrates repeatedly that socialism has not produced freedom anywhere in history. It was a socialist idea that created the terror that we've experienced in the world. With millions now dead and millions more living in the most backward of economic conditions and police state oppression, do the socialists admit a connection between their ideology and results? With all the hallmarks of religious cultism, the socialists continue in denial and to believe through the most amazing mental gymnastics in the socialist dream, the left, like all religious cultists, tolerates no dissent. Those committed to the cult of Marxism are trying to impose a hellish form of penance, destruction of freedom and prosperity on everyone to assuage their own guilt. Horowitz established the inescapable conclusion that the reign of socialist terror is the responsibility of all those who have promoted the socialist idea, which required so much blood to implement, and then did not work, on page 108. What a great quotation. He's absolutely right. Now, as far as I know, Horowitz is not a Christian, by the way. Here's an example of being able to read somebody who's an unbeliever, somebody like Ayn Rand, for instance, and be able to profit from what you read. And many people are not aware what socialism is or communism is really in detail. They just know it must be bad because they've heard people bad talk it or bad mouth it. Well, here is something to hang your hat on, folks. This book review gives you an excellent reason why you should reject socialism, why socialism has caused so much harm in the world, and that bring you up to speed on the fact that this has been responsible for the murder of millions and chaos without compare in the history of the world. That's a good lead-in for our next topic of discussion, actually, which is what happened at the Institute for the Constitution meeting last night. There were a number of discussions about the role of government. In fact, we'll carry this over into the next hour because we only have a minute here before our break comes up. But just to make note that there was discussion about the role of the state in society. The video lectures were promoted by David Barton, who I believe is a theonomist. I may be mistaken. If he's not, he's a divine writer. And another fellow called Dr. Faulkner, both of them very eloquent and inspired men, obviously, in what they're doing. But Faulkner, likewise, is a divine writer, I would say, possibly a theonomist or a Christian Reconstructionist. And because they have these particular points of view, these principled positions, or at least if they are theonomic, I don't think divine right's a very principled position personally, but as long as they seem to be very principled, and that's why I said they may be holding the theonomic ethic here and presupposition system, they held that the state had a particular role in society. And what was the state's role, or what is the state's role, or what should the state's role be? It should be to punish evildoers that God thinks are evildoers, and to reward those who God thinks are good. Of course, the rub comes in the fact that states don't do this. In fact, states have done the opposite. They did exactly the opposite when Paul wrote, especially under Nero and his cronies and his rulers of the day. So then, how can we, as a Christian worldview, accept this perspective? Well, they didn't go to it in the video, but traditionally, the theonomics camp has basically said, look, the positions that are laid out in Scripture about the Christian's response to civil government have to do with an idealized state. and therefore it didn't really apply, except in the abstract, to comfort the people knowing that there could be good government when they were writing to those Christians in the first century. There may be another way to look at it, though, and I think that there is. We'll tell you about it right when we come back from this break on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
We welcome you back to Christian Worldview. This is Dr. John Coben. It's currently 51 degrees here in Greenville, going to get up to 59 degrees. Going to have some showers this morning and thunderstorms in the afternoon, so be prepared as you may make your way on out to work this morning. Just a reminder, since we're talking a little bit about these secessionist principles today here and there, that there's going to be a League of the South meeting this Thursday evening at 6:30 p.m. at the Prime Sirloin on Woodruff Road across from the Greenville Mall if you can attend. That's 6:30, to come and talk about some of the political things they're involved with. Also, Confederate Memorial Day coming up Saturday, April 30th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at Clinton Square in Clinton, South Carolina. For information or details, call James DeShields after 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 864-969-5029. Hope you can attend that event as well. We've been talking about what transpired at the Institute for the Constitution last night. That's a meeting that's well worth attending in the South Point Baptist Church. That's located at 203 Ina Marie Lane in Pelzer. You can call Tony Romo for information. Pastor Tony Romo can be reached at 864-269-1443. That's 864-269-1443. The fourth event will occur next Monday, and we'll encourage you to attend that meeting. I attended it last night, and one of the topics of discussion, we've just already discussed several of them here on the show this morning, was the whole issue of how you interpret the role of the state in so-called punishing evildoers and rewarding those who do good. Let me read something from the scriptures, Romans 13 and 1 Peter chapter 2. Let's put this in context and make a few comments along the way as I do read this. Paul says, remember now, Paul is writing to the Roman Christians, as were Peter, under the reign of Nero. Nero was a man who murdered his own mother, so broke the fifth commandment as well as the sixth. He was a man who obviously was holding pagan religion, if any religion at all. He was a treacherous man and a thief. The guy broke every one of the Ten Commandments. He was an evildoer par excellence, if you can call such a thing excellent. And the same is true of his cronies under him, as far as we know. The people like Pontius Pilate and others who served at his will were no less evildoers. The man was wicked. It was a wicked administration, and Paul and Peter were writing to Christians suffering under them. Paul writing directly to the citizens, the Christians who were there at Rome under the emperor, as well as Peter writing to the Christians who had been exiled to what would be today the part of Turkey on the Baltic Sea, central Turkey, to live in poverty there on account of their faith. So those are the people being written to primarily in these passages. In Romans 13:1 we read, "Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God." So there should be no question to us as Christians that God ordains the state. He ordains that all things that come to pass, as the Westminster Confession says, he even ordains the activities of Satan. And so it's pretty clear from the scriptures here that we have to be able to conclude that God has ordained any government. And this must be a great consolation to the Romans who were listening, in my view, who were living under Nero, much as it would have been to Christians living under Adolf Hitler or Joseph Stalin or Abraham Lincoln, for that matter, that God had ordained the event. And although they were going to suffer at the hands of the state, they could be assured that God was in charge. That's how I take that verse. Now, other people don't take it that way. They would look at it saying, well, God ordained the state, and therefore they make the next logical leap, which isn't necessarily true. Well, government must be, the state must be a great thing and must be helpful as God's servant, as it's going to say in the next verse, to do his will and promote his kingdom in the world. Not true. I don't think that's the case, but I can see how one would arrive at that position. At any rate, continuing on, verse 2. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. So here's the point Paul's making. Look, remember, when you resist these people, you're resisting something that God has ordained. He set forth as an authority at that particular time. And even though Nero is evil, if you do that, you're going to be resisting what God has set in place. So just bear that in mind, he says. Verse 3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same, for he is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. God's minister, that word minister there is the word diakonos in Greek. It means servant, essentially. It doesn't mean he's a deacon in a church sense. It just means he's a servant. Well, here's the perplexing part. The apostles Paul and Peter were not insane. They were not looking at Nero and Pilate and some of these other wicked rulers of the time and saying in any way, shape, or form, in my view, that they were not a terror to people who were doing good works like Christians were doing, because they were. They were banishing these people, ripping apart families, impaling Christians on poles and lighting up gardens with them at night, feeding them to the lions. I mean, this was horrible if you were one who did good at that particular point in time. They were a terror to those who were Christians and obviously all those who would do things that were good as far as God was concerned at that time. And he says, if you don't want to be afraid of them, then don't do the good works. Instead, do what they think is good, and you'll be rewarded. That's what Paul and Peter are telling us here. Peter says this in the same way in Romans. I should skip over and read that a minute just before I continue with my commentary here Verse 13 of 1 Peter chapter 2, therefore submit yourself to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or to governors as those who are sent for him by him for the punishment of evil doers and for the praise of those who do good. So the same language is located in the Apostle Peter's writing as well. Well, the problem is they were not punishing evildoers in accord to what God thought was evil. They were clearly doing the exact opposite. Christians were being punished. Idolaters, adulterers, blasphemers, thieves, these people were being exalted not only into the Senate, but other positions of the state, and they were given privilege by government. This was the reality then, and frankly, folks, it's been the reality all along. There's not been really a long-standing tradition of government or that hasn't become a state that has quickly plundered the people and turned it into something absolutely wicked. This is the reality of the world. So here's the problem you face when you're the interpretive problem when we come to these passages. Were the apostles Paul and Peter truly out of their mind, or were they actually doing something, or were they actually telling the Romans something a little bit different? Namely, were they telling the Romans and the ones who've been banished from Rome, look, here's the situation. God ordains this state. It's in his will. Don't worry about it. You're going to be suffering here. If you end up resisting what the state tells you to do, but you can be afraid because they're going to attack you. And they are a terror to those who they think are evil, and to those who are they think are good, they bless. That is diametrically opposed traditionally or historically, and it was at that point, to what God thinks is good and evil. So Nero would stand up and reward those who were wicked, the idolaters and adulterers, and he would instead punish all of those rather than reward those who were good in God's sight. He would punish those who were good in God's sight. Why? Well, because the state has a satanic nature, and that can also be evidenced from the scriptures. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Government is not reason. It is not eloquence. Government is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. President George Washington.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's nppros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.nppros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
We're talking about the interpretation of Romans chapter 13 and 1 Peter chapter 2. We could also throw in Titus 3:1. That's a little bit redundant. Once you do these two, I think you do that one automatically, the short passage there in comments of Paul to Titus. This was spawned by the Institution of the Constitutions meeting last night and the video that came on with David Barton as well as John Eidsmo. These folks are good men, Christians who are endeavoring to do the will of God and have principled approaches to public policy. They happen to have a particular view that I don't concur with, and that's that they look at these passages as saying to us that the state, or government for that matter, I guess, would have a role in promoting the kingdom of God by punishing those who God thinks are evil and rewarding those who God thinks are good. And I take issue with this. I think this is an exegetical error. I think it's a common error. But we're discussing those perspectives now as we read through these biblical passages. Now, I should digress and try to be a little bit objective and give you, just quickly, as I have many times on the program before, the overview of how people interpret this passage. There are at least four different ways I've heard of. One, which I'll dismiss quite quickly as being the least effective, perhaps, at understanding of the Scripture, is to simply say that these rulers that are talked about here, these authorities that are talked about, are not talking about civil rulers, are not talking about the state or government at all. When these passages are speaking, they're talking about something other, maybe a family authority or could be a church authority. I think this has to be dismissed simply because in the context you're talking about the sword and you're talking about taxes and customs and so forth, and therefore I don't see how this could be the case. So putting that rather minor view aside, then there is the divine right view, or the revitalized divine right of kings view that we find here in the world of Christianity so commonly today. This is the Tory view, the same view that Tories would have held. And they essentially say that somehow, in some way, God was talking about the Christian emperor, the Roman emperor at the time of the first century when he wrote to the Christians there. And he was telling the Christians, look, God ordained the state, Nero, and all his cronies, to punish those who God thinks are evil, and he was doing that to some extent. Not perfectly, they'll say. He was rather imperfect in his administration, but he was still trying to do that. He was also promoting good things in society. Now, to me, this is a rather insane view, but this is what's commonly taught, that they read this passage, they say, this is what government is, we have to obey it, the American Revolution was sin, the work of the South and seceding from the Union was wrong and sinful, these actions were rebellious to the state and therefore needed to be opposed by Christians, because what Paul says here is that, you know, this is the way the state is, it really is helpful arm and entity in bringing order and removing chaos from society. Well, exactly the opposite has been true historically. It was exactly the opposite then. States are responsible for more chaos and disorder in society than any other institution. The only thing that might come close is false religion when it really gets on a roll. But the state has simply not been what these divine writers think it to be. Well, the third perspective is the theonomic perspective, and this makes a little bit more sense if you want to accept it, I think, logically speaking. They say that, look, we realize that Nero was not in the mind and focus of the apostles here when he talked about promoting what is good or rewarding the one who does good and punishing the evildoer. We believe that these are evildoers defined by God, and those who do good is defined by God. And therefore, what Paul was doing is engaging in a little bit of a theological abstraction. He had talked about the very practical things in Romans chapter 12, but he just decided to tell him a theoretical lesson about what government would be like in either a golden age, a postmillennial reign, or just ideally at some other time in history. What government could be like, or should be like, I should say. And so it's not actually describing the reality of the day, just giving Christians an ideal to shoot for. Well, I find that to be a very difficult interpretive thing to believe, that Paul would just jump out without any warning or any indication that he's doing to do so and make that sort of a leap. But nevertheless, I respect that point of view, and those people who hold it, I think, are very principled people, and may have included the people at the Institute for the Constitution, Mr. Barton and Mr. Eidsmo. Anyway, in my view, the best way to understand this is, as we've been discussing, the liberty of conscience point of view. The words good and evil here are defined not according to what God thinks is good and evil, but according to what the state or Nero deemed to be good and evil at the time. And that's how we should go through and interpret these particular passages. The state is ordained by God. If we resist the state, we are going to have problems, and therefore, in general, we should submit. It doesn't mean that we go out of our way to scour every law or every regulation or every legislation possible and obey it. We have some obligation to go out of our way. But when it bumps up against us, when we pass through the gate and the guy taps us on the back with a stick and says, pay up or die, we pay. We submit, because our main role in life here is not to attack the state or to engage in armed revolution. Our main goal is to preach the gospel. Doesn't mean we can't take up arms. I don't think that's the conclusion that we'd run to at particular points in time when we can actually make a launch and attempt for freedom. But the main goal and purpose of our lives is not to rally for political causes, and I think that's what Paul's point is. If you do disobey, he says, beware, because he's going to attack anyone who he thinks is evil. He's going to reward only those who he thinks are good. And so be prepared. Pay the taxes, do whatever is necessary to keep this guy off your back. Call it pragmatism, if you will, I think, in a sense, it is a pragmatic position, and that's why I use that word, actually, in Bible and government. Maybe a better word to use is expedient. But it's obvious to me, anyway, that this passage needs to be interpreted a little bit differently than what many Christians are interpreting it today. So I thought I'd throw that out for your food for thought this morning. If you attend the Institute for the Constitution, we'll have more rousing discussion about that point and many others, as that presupposition makes a huge difference on how you believe and hold the rest of the response of Christians to republic policy or the role of the state in the world. And I hope you'll appreciate that very point. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we're really dealing with the Christian worldview this morning, folks, in a very deep way, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Will Rogers said, "Those who complain about the high cost of government should be glad we're not getting all the government we're paying for."
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking and will soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
We have the rights as individuals to give as much of our own money as we please to charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right so to appropriate a dollar of public money. Congressman Davy Crockett.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
But the real question today, I suppose, is do the Republicans do that? I doubt that. We have a couple of Republican stories today. I thought I'd end the show by reading some of these things the research staff sent up to us. One is a commentary by one of our favorite guys, Chuck Baldwin. Republican leadership seeks to ensconce judicial tyranny. He says, speaking to church groups around the country, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist tried to rally support for President Bush's judicial nominees. In so doing, Frist promoted his intention to change Senate rules in order to prevent Democrats from using filibusters to delay Senate votes on presidential nominees. Several elements of the story are very disturbing, says Chuck Baldwin. First, it is now painfully obvious that Republican Party considers evangelical churches mere partisan political pawns. Though I've never personally received such a letter giving marching orders through the Republican Party, I've heard that many pastors regularly receive suggested sermons from Republican officials. Isn't that ridiculous? I mean, can you believe what we've come to today? Chuck Baldwin writes, can you imagine the Apostle Paul being told by Nero's administration what to preach? Or imagine Herod suggesting a sermon subject to John the Baptist? Second, I wonder how Senator Frist and his fellow Republicans would feel if it were a Democratic Senate Majority Leader who was attempting to deny Republican senators from their legal right to filibuster. Third, while Senator Frist seems to suggest that President Bush wants to appoint conservative justices to the federal bench, his stated comments on the role of the judiciary in Congress reveal just the opposite. For example, according to AP reports, Senator Frist said, judges deserve respect, not retaliation, no matter how they rule. In other words, Senator Frist believes that the judiciary has no accountability to anyone. Obviously, Senator Frist has not read the U.S. Constitution. If he had, he would know that Article 3, Section 1 clearly gives Congress the power to hold courts accountable. It states that the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges, both of the Supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior. Obviously, it is Congress that must determine what is and what is not good behavior. Senator Frist is ceding tyrannical power to the judiciary, contrary to both the spirit and letter of the U.S. Constitution. Will Senator Frist succeed? We should all pray that he does not, says Chuck Baldwin. Appreciate that point. Republicans are full of inconsistencies, duplicity, and you have to watch every move they make because, like their promotion of the neocon Put Parents in Charge Act, they're going to try to slip things in the back door that actually come back to bite us. They believe they're doing some social good and really ignorantly proceeding down a path that is going to destroy us and harm us in some way. The public school system is one great example of this some institution they support that is our complete undoing. Put Parents in Charge, I've heard, by the way, from our research staff, is getting worse. The homeschoolers who naively are supporting this bill, even though Ben Graydon, I, Juliet Kosack, and Al Hafer, Dr. Al Hafer, did a magnificent job in the Times Examiner promoting and exposing this farce. At any rate, it's getting worse. The homeschoolers sold out, went there and got some of their little favorite pieces stuck into this bill. But then it came back out of committee, and it's got far more monitoring and regulation required now than it ever did before. So now the state is showing its true colors a little further. Not the state, but the proponents of this bill. What they're after, folks, in PPIC is not just to give you a little carrot, a little tax credit, a few hundred bucks. They want control over the homeschool environment. They want to regulate what curriculum is used, what's being taught, when the hours of instruction. They want credentialing. This is what their ultimate goal is, folks, to bring us under the control of, if not the NEA, some state organization that won't let homeschoolers get out of hand. Why? Because they know who their true enemy is. They know that we win if homeschooling wins, and they can see us getting the upper hand over all the idiots that are being turned out of public schools. I'm sorry, I don't mean to disparage any particular individual by saying that, but let's face it. The public school, the typical public school graduate is completely ignorant about most things academically, and what he has learned is a bunch of liberal babble. And that's exactly who the state likes to have under its dominion. But as a matter of course, when they see the Christians turning out high-quality prospects academically who understand things politically and spiritually, they have the reason to be threatened, and that's what they're responding against. So anyway, we should definitely be opposing the PPIC as one of these typical neocon intrusions. Another one is this business about repudiating common law marriage, which we've been talking about on the show here. That's got to be something we completely oppose at all times, no matter how many Republicans get behind it. Folks, we need to have the state out of the marriage business. It should not be granting licenses to anyone to get married. It should have nothing to do with marriage whatsoever, and we need to uphold anything that is a backdoor approach to the state licensing system, including the common law marriage system, and that's why we need to oppose that bill that's made it through the committee and now is going to the House floor here in South Carolina. We'd love to hear more about what's going on in other states of those who are listening outside. Please send us some emails and telephone calls and let us know what's happening in your area so that we can keep abreast of those issues as well. One other Republican sort of email come up from the research staff. The National Republican Senatorial Committee has some interesting information. This is coming from Elizabeth Dole herself. In fact, she says, roll call, the Capitol Hill newspaper reported recently that senior Democratic aides were meeting with the big labor unions to pull them into this fight. Let's see what fight she's talking about. I'm sorry. She's talking about the judicial nominees. I thought I'd missed something here. No, she's talking about judicial nominees. What's even more alarming is the fact that most of the far left special interests in Washington, MoveOn.org, People for the American Way and the Alliance for Justice, funded by the liberal billionaires like George Soros, have launched a multi-million dollar TV, radio, and print campaign targeting pro-Bush senators in these nomination battles. President Bush and our Senate majority need you in this fight because the far left is fully engaged. And she's talking about they're derailing the entire Bush agenda. But what is the Bush agenda if it's not pure neocon nonsense? Anyway, can I count on you to take on the stand against these determined liberals? Well, yes, Elizabeth Dole, you can count on me to take a stand against determined liberals, but you know what? We are also going to take a determined stand against you, you neocon Republicans who do nothing to help the cause of truth and righteousness in this country, period. And so you need to be deposed as well as them. She keeps talking about her agenda in here, and our research staff rightly is pointing out, well, what is Elizabeth Dole's agenda, or the Republican senator, whatever it's called, National Republican Senatorial Committee's agenda? Well, for whatever it is, we can see the bad results of the thing, and we are opposed to it, as well as to the liberals themselves. You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Copen. Hope you've enjoyed the show today. It's been an exciting show, talked about so many different interesting points. Look forward to getting your questions by email or your phone calls tomorrow as we continue again with another edition of Christian Worldview. Until then, God bless you.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Copen on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Copen.
Hi, this is Dr. John Copen with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially